Google it if you. Hey, friends. Welcome to the Leadership Deep Dive. Well, we're just diving right in today because
We are.
Margaret and I were dealing with some particles
I
before we got
know,
on the.
and it's ironic given our topic, which is intelligence overrated? And halfway through David's sentence, I hit record thinking I was going to get one more prompt, but I didn't. So here we are.
And of course, I was using my intelligence to go Google something about, recordings of Zoom. So it was just really appropriate. She's like, I heard recording to the cloud, and I'm like, okay, we're on.
I thought I was going to make that choice and then get a prompt to actually start recording, but that is not what happened, David. That is not what
No.
happened.
Well, for the last couple of weeks, Margaret, I've written some of you in the audience who subscribe to my LinkedIn newsletter may notice that I wrote a couple of articles based on some verses out of the Tao Te Ching, which is an ancient Chinese text that I'm kind of plowing through and sort of applying those lessons to real-time life and leadership. Lao Tzu, who was the author of these sayings, collection of sayings, spends quite a bit of time discussing how you should get stupid real fast. The leaders, the emperors who were the it's like I think about Sergeant Schultz in Hogan's Heroes, where he used to say, "I know nothing."
Not a Hogan's Heroes watcher, but I've certainly heard I know nothing.
So this is like a this is one of the paradox. We often, Margaret and I, talk a lot about paradoxes, and in our leadership training, we were invited to live it with those, live in the paradox, like in that not knowing this or that.
And I think so. We've both been kind of grappling with this question: is intelligence overrated? And the inspiration for me to get on that topic was, I just can't even tell you how often it is when I meet with a new client who needs to be fundraising and they're really struggling with it, and that they believe that the best way for them to show up is like total smarty pants, like they forget that they have other parts of their personalities. So it's like an all in on the most important thing is for me to qualify myself. And spoiler alert, it doesn't go so well for fundraising. But that was,
And
yeah, so.
you wrote an excellent post last week. So, folks, if you want to explore more about how this applies, if you're in the fundraising field and you want to, explore more of Margaret's thinking on this, she wrote a really good post about how we would call it, like, I would put this in the land of the hyper-rational saboteur. Because a lot of our intelligence is a lot of modern intelligence is that left brain, rational, analytical type thinking.
Almost
And there might be,
hyperlogical, right? In addition, yeah,
And
hyperrational,
hyper rational. What did I say before?
I think I don't remember, but I thought maybe hypervigilant, but I can't
Oh
remember.
no, hyper rational. If I said hyper vigilant, I apologize. I meant the hyper rational.
I mean, they're cousins.
True. You'll rationalize why you're so vigilant, but also hyperachiever for the particularly for fundraisers, the wanting to look good and avoid looking bad, I think lives in the land of the hyperachiever as a saboteur. So you're doubly sabotaging yourself by thinking like, and by the way, thinking lives in the land of intelligence, thinking that I have to look good and be the smartest when I'm with this donor. That's a double sabotaging yourself, folks.
And I think the paradox of this is, I would never coach somebody in either a leadership context or a fundraising context to like show up as intentionally ditzy, or like I'm not actually telling people to dumb themselves down. It's more like when we walk in thinking that we have to be intelligent, it's like that's our mask, and it's all just that one color of trying so hard to be smart, to look good and avoid looking bad, as David is saying. And it really parks us all the way away from all of our other connection tools that we have, right? Whereas if you can like have a striped thing going in, and one of the stripes might be intelligence, like it's all great that you're smart and you got the job and you understand all the cool stuff that your nonprofit does or that your team does from a leadership context, but that's not the only card that you want to have in your deck.
Well, I remember some, Margaret and I have created a very powerful, we co-created a very powerful fundraising training program called Being a Mega Gifts, Being a Mega Gifts fundraiser. And it's very powerful because it focuses more on the emotional field, more on intuition, more on right brain type things and heart-based stuff, which is where all the big gifts in nonprofits get raised. The small gifts will get raised by the rational analytical part of stuff, like you're going to do the annual campaign and we're going to send out this many emails and do. And I do this, I do that, and then $3 comes in, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're not talking about that, but we led a team through this, and there were several hyper rationals in that group, and it was very hard for them
Yeah.
to
It was hard. I
it was hard, yeah.
think it is hard. And I think in many big fundraising shops, they teach people who are up and coming, you know, keep it professional, keep it professional. And again, we're not saying be unprofessional. Right. We're just saying, like, you actually have to open up a little bit and you have to be generous with yourself if you want other people to do the same. You know,
Now, be professional. So I'm going to say, here's another paradox. Like, by not opening up your heart along with your mind, you're not being a professional fundraiser.
yeah, there you go.
Actually, you are sabotaging yourself and the conversation, and you're cutting off half of who you are as a professional by not opening up your intuition and your heart.
I think we even like, I think this came up in the course, and it was certainly something that I experienced as a fundraiser. Like, and it's kind of this skill called clearing, right? So way early in the conversation, when you sit across the table from, and again, I'm talking about donors, but this is generalizable to anybody that you're having conversation with, and they ask you the question, "Oh, how are you?" You know, and if you really want to sound smart, you say, "Oh, I'm fine. How are you?" You know, and you don't open it up at all. But if there is actually something going on for you, and you take that moment to give an honest answer, you don't have to hijack the conversation. You just have to share. You know, I remember a point in time when one of my kids was really struggling in school, and people would ask me, you know, "How are you?" And if I knew that they had kids, I might just share enough not to make anybody uncomfortable, but just share a little. You know, well, in the spirit of transparency, I'm a little wobbly today because da 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 da. And then I could stop and I could turn the conversation back to them. But just that share, just that honest answer, even if it was only this tiny amount of honest answer, opened up the space so much. I mean, I think that was actually, you know, thank you to my kiddo who struggled, because I think that actually really made me a much better fundraiser. Because I couldn't just walk in and pretend everything was perfect, because it wasn't for me. But it was a great example. And we had some people in our group do that. You know, even if you just opened up with an honest, you know, like, "I got stuck in terrible traffic on the way here," or, "My goldfish died this morning," or, you know, just with an honest answer that you may not have sound as smart, but it opens things up enormously in the space.
It just reminds me about another way we sabotage ourselves and relationships is that stickler, that perfectionist, that what believes that everything has to be said perfectly. Like you can't say this is like combines with the hyperachiever and the hyper rational to create the stiffest fundraiser you could ever imagine.
Yeah, right.
Like
Because it's
no loose to it at all.
right. If the conversation goes like this, hello, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? Right? Like, now where do you go with the
Right.
conversation? Like, you've hit a dead end already.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I also think that, so much emotion, and we could stay on the topic of fundraising and maybe we'll bridge over more broadly to leadership, but so much of why donors give is because of emotion, and yet the frontline fundraisers out there are being counseled to keep their emotions out of it.
Yeah, it's true. You know, at the other, I'll say for myself, I resonate much more with people when I allow myself to be warm. But somewhere in my brain over the course of my life, before I did, a lot of the work that I've done and a lot of the learning that I've done, I thought in order to sound smart, I couldn't be warm, that it was one or the other, that I had to make a choice. And so when my warm wants to come out, but I'm stuffing it in and I'm trying really hard to be very serious and, look really smart and talk about what's going on, I don't land, right? Like, nothing about me resonates. And I think that's true when you try to squelch any part of you that might be bubbly or might be eccentric or might be, physical or like all these different, I mean, I know, I'm referring to leadership styles, but like when you have stuff that makes you and you try to squish it down and repress it because you don't believe you can be those things and seem smart, it really falls flat with people.
Well, yeah, it creates dissonance if you are this is in any relationship, if you're not revealing, or if you're covering up, or if you're armoring up, as Brené Brown likes to say, so not being vulnerable, this creates, or you're wearing a mask, you go into, you're always wearing the same mask. Perfect, I'm achiever, and I'm super smart and hyper rational. Then, except underneath, you may be imperfect, we all are. You may make decisions that are, and by the way, the science on decision making is in that most people decide on emotion and they rationalize it with rational quantitative thinking. And how many times have we failed, right? But you're never going to tell anybody that.
Yeah.
Or either that, or you don't go for stuff because you don't want to ever say that you failed at it. So a lot of people play small in life because their hyperachiever would never let them fail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of
And all this
culture?
is true in any aspect of relationship, right? Because if you are the leader of a team and always have to be the smartest person in the room, then people won't say anything.
Right.
Why would
People
they?
stop sharing their brilliance or their creativity
Yeah.
because it gets shut down or it's, gets, it just doesn't, it doesn't invite other people into the space when you.
Yeah, it's also it totally create, sabotages innovation, for example, like you said, creativity. Let's just use a word that's in the popular lexicon,
Right.
innovation, right? Which
Right.
is creativity.
Brainstorming is no longer possible.
Right?
Right?
No,
When
you
the
can't.
leader, the impact of a leader of a team coming in and always needing to be the smartest person in the room, the impact of that is no innovation, no brainstorming,
No
people,
risk, no risk taking,
no
no
risk,
risk
right?
taking.
And people stop being generous with their own skills, right? They start
Yeah.
withholding because, like, why bother doing anything different?
I've worked with a lot of very smart people, or significant portion of my adult life, many of them in higher ed. So super brainy, left brainy. Could be very judgy. So this is the other aspect of intelligence, is that when someone offers up a wildly innovative, creative idea, the smartest person in the room will usually judge that as that's crazy.
Or that, right, less than what they could have come up with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So being the smartest, look, we're not, Margaret said this, we're not saying, don't use your gifts of intelligence. It's just that that's not the only gift you have.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I don't think I've ever worked with a person who didn't have some brilliance, right? I mean, they're leading organizations and they're doing really important work and they're making money flow and they're leading, right? Like, it's not that you're not smart. It's just that when you start somehow auditioning for that, with team members or donors, it just doesn't go well.
Yeah, there's also, I think there's also this false idea that, especially for first-time leaders, if you're in the audience, you may suffer from this a little bit. It is that, well, I was promoted to be the leader of this team, so I have to demonstrate, how smart I am.
Yeah.
And so there's a bit of ego that gets tied up with that too. Like, it's also a little bit of imposter syndrome, right? If I'm not the smartest person in the room, then I'm an imposter. So that can come in also.
Right. That,
Yeah.
yes, I love that. Because yeah, I really feel like sometimes people who suffer from imposter syndrome, it's because they have a really narrow definition of, what belongs at that table, right? It's this wide instead of all the different ways that
Yeah.
success and contributions can look like. They
Yeah.
narrow it down to one very, and it usually looks like, yeah, everybody needs to know that I'm smart and I'm qualified and I have all the training and the education that I need to do this.
Yeah, I think one of the best questions, sometimes clients hire Margaret and me to be their executive coach, leadership coach, and they think they're hiring us because, we have all this training, and we have this background, and then they start asking us questions, which we may or may not know the answer to. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, but more often than that, even if I have an answer, my favorite response is, "I don't know. What do you think?" And it's interesting. They'll come up with stuff that I wasn't even thinking about, Yeah. And it's usually pretty good.
That is, it's an interesting phenomenon to want, to, yes, to want people to tell you answers.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's easy,
We've all been
especially
there.
if.
I'm there at least once a day. Tell me what to do, right?
Well, one of my impacts is that people do look to me for answers, because I'm about an inch deep and a mile wide with a lot of useless information.
Good at trivia night, is that what you're telling us, David?
I don't know. I have some knowledge, I have some wisdom. I'm always happy to share it, but it may not be applicable for your situation, Martin. I refrain. I especially with my children, I refrain from, because they come to me, mostly my younger daughter, who's on this path of leadership, and it frustrates her because she knows I have some kind of an answer, and she knows my racket, so I run a reverse racket on her of like, I don't know. But she knows that I'm running like the reverse I'm stupid racket on her. She really does want my opinion sometimes. But
Yeah.
I let her sort through it. So we were watching, she was home. We were watching a movie with oh, who's the guy? It's a movie about a sort of a high school science teacher. I can't think of the actor's name, and he goes into outer space to save the world, and he runs into this alien being out there in outer space. Not Ryan
Oh,
Reynolds, but
Project Hail Mary.
yeah, Project Hail Mary, right?
I
Yes,
can't
thank you,
believe forget that. Ryan Gosling, hello.
Ryan Gosling. See, I know nothing,
There
Margaret. You see, I'm just demonstrating it, really.
go.
So we enjoyed the movie, and at the very end, I said, because I've written a book about life lessons from memorable movies, and so I said to my daughter Claudia, who was home with us, I said, "Well, what's the life lesson? What's the central lesson of this movie?" It's a leading question. I was totally leading the witness here, and she's like, "I don't know. Just tell me. I hate when you do this." I was like, "No, you have to struggle with it. What is the most important message from that film?" And she grappled, and she grappled, and she grappled, and she fr got frustrated. And she's like, "I don't know. Tell me. Just tell me." I was like, "No, I'm not going to tell you." And then finally, she blurted it out: "Love." And I was like, "Very good, very good." Yeah.
That's more like a quiz when there's only one right answer, David.
There are other lessons in that movie, but that was the central lesson. So yes, it was a quiz. It's true. It was a leading question.
Yeah.
And those can be effective also.
Sometimes, yeah, sure
You know?
can. Yeah.
Yeah. So, for the parents out there, again, this is a bit of a paradox or a bit of a challenging situation when you're raising children, because part of us, at least from my perspective, part of my responsibility as a parent was to be a guide and a mentor. And but as they matured more, I was stepped back more into my coaching, role.
Yeah, I got taught a fabulous lesson by one of my sons just as he was going into middle school. And before that, he would always ask me questions and I would just, blurt out, "Mom, should I wear the red shirt or the blue shirt? Wear the blue shirt, honey, or should I do this or should I do that?" And I always had an answer. And then I don't know why it struck me in the way that it did, but as he was heading into middle school, which is a time, obviously, when risk is higher and you really need kids to start thinking more about the decisions. The stakes are a little higher as they start to enter right into those teenage and preteen years. And he said, I just make the worst decisions, Mom. I just make the worst decisions." And I just thought to myself, I'm done making decisions for him. And to this day, I don't know that I mean, I might, if asked, might tell him what I would do, but I no longer just blurted out after that. I was like, "No, this is a kid who actually needs to focus on the decisions." And I just got this giant download in that moment, like, I am doing him a huge disservice by picking which shirt. I don't know, honey, which one do you want to wear? Like, what color are you in the mood for today? Like, would have been a much better. But I was stopping in, and then as soon as he said, "I make terrible decisions," as he's heading into the possibility of drugs and unprotected sex, like any of the things that you're like, no, I need you to make good decisions here. And I thought, I need to stop making choices for him so that he learns how to make his own choices. It's a great lesson.
I think you and I are speaking, and maybe there is a countercultural movement afoot. I think you and I were raised to be very independent, by just the way we were raised, in our families. I know your story, you know my story, and yet there was a backlash to that. With the helicopter parenting, and you and I didn't get caught up too much in that, but a lot of folks did. And who doesn't want to protect their children? I mean, this was always a difficult for me because of my the one thing I get hyper vigilant about is my children.
And
My
safety. I know that's a big,
safety of,
yeah.
yeah, that's correct. Yes, yeah, around protecting them. And so I have to resist that. Boy, that comes up even now, like with my younger daughter visiting, and then she's going out with her girlfriends, and I know where she's going, and I know what's happening for the most part, and I just have to zip it up,
Yeah.
I have to zip it up and let her go and make choices. And so I understand that whether you're a leader or you're a parent that will, and you know what can happen, to resist that urge to tell them what to do,
And I love that we're talking about this in a parenting context. And I'm gonna close the circle here because one of the things that I wrote about, but I wanted to, just explain a little bit more. One of the problems with, a client, a fundraiser going in and just feeling like they're auditioning to be seen as intelligent to get that donation is that sometimes they can't stop talking. Right, they're so busy presenting, and another thing, and another fact, and another good story of one of our clients, and sometimes you can just see their donor at one moment is like leaning forward, and their eyes are lit up, and the fundraiser has said something that really landed, and then and then the fundraiser just they're so busy trying to be smart that they just steamroll right over it. And they don't stop there and they don't take the opportunity of that moment to go deeper and to learn something about why the donor's interested. But it's exactly the same in parenting, right? When we're so busy telling our kids what to do or, being the smartest person in the room, we miss those moments where they soften, right? And there might be a chance for them to really learn something or ask a question or, right? If we, But our intuition goes away when we're so busy talking. We
So
miss those moments.
one of the things we do in our Mega Gifts fundraising program is, explore this listening, what Margaret's talking about here. And you would think that by the way, you wouldn't think you would know that fundraisers are pretty good listeners. They are. It's just I remember distinctly when I got into fundraising how poor my listening was, and how I needed to work on that. And even more so when I got into coaching. So, that this has been a 20-year journey in
We'll just call it a
listening.
multi-decade journey.
Multi-decade. Thank you. That would be the more intelligent thing to say, Margaret.
Well, I am just, it really matters a lot
You
to me. I'm
are very
slowly.
intelligent, by the way, I have to admit.
Thank you.
When I slow that busy, active part of my mind down, that's, functioning over there on the left brain side, I am able to listen better. Not perfectly, but I am able to listen better. And that's part of our program. We actually, you would think like fundraisers already know how to listen, and they do, but we have a way of even deepening that more in that
Right, really
program.
breaking it down. Yeah.
And listening to our intuition, and we've talked about that many times here on the show. That's the
Yeah.
part that you want to turn the volume up on.
Right.
Yeah.
But
The other
unfortunately,
part, you want to turn the volume down, right? On the,
yeah.
yeah, exactly. On the other
Right.
listening, like that.
And it's really important that they're related, right? Like the more you turn the volume up on needing to impress people, the more the
Right.
volume
Of
counter at the
course.
same time
Yes.
goes down on
Yes.
really listening, really having intuition, really feeling a moment of invitation from who you're talking to, kid, donor, person on your team, that they're open, like that they are ready to connect about something and deepen something. We don't want to miss those moments.
No. So if there was something for us along these lines of turning down that volume on our intelligence,
Yeah,
so we
I
could
have a
turn
thing.
up the volume on our intuition or our real knowing, our deep knowing.
Yeah. I've
What
got a
would
thing.
we, you got something?
I got a thing. Yeah.
All right.
I would say, sometimes that it's turning the volume down on smart requires trusting, right? That you just are and it's going to come across and you don't have to tap dance. But one way to do that for me, I ask people sometimes to think about like who they are when they're totally open, when they're totally unscripted, like at a gathering with friends, where you're totally engaged and you're having fun. And think of some of the ways that your friends would describe you. Would they tell you you're funny, or would they tell you you're warm, or would they tell you know like what would be some words that your friends would use? And try before you meet with somebody to pick one of those words about yourself that other people would give you about yourself, and then go into your meeting with the volume turned up a little bit on that one as an alternative.
This is a bit of an invitation to unmask
Yeah.
all the masks that you wear in different, especially at work or in a donor meeting or even as a parent,
Yeah. Even especially as a parent, maybe.
especially as a parent,
Yeah.
to take those masks off. This is just an invitation to see what happens when you do. Even this invitation might be for the hyper-rational, hyper-achiever sticklers out there. This invitation might be really a challenge, as we kind of saw in our course. It often is a challenge. So I'm actually going to appeal to your hyperachiever out there. Like, if you really want to achieve, take this on.
Yeah. By being in a slightly different quality, right, about yourself. Yeah. Great. There's something for people to try.
All right. Let us know how it works out.
Yes. We'll see you next time.